Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Most parents hear it all the time. Get more involved in your child's school. Get to know their teacher. For some, that's easy. They have the time. They feel comfortable in the offices and hallways of schools. But for others, the message isn't as clear. Maybe they don't hear the clarion call for their involvement because of a language or cultural or socioeconomic barrier. Maybe they don't have the time or feel comfortable in a place where they themselves might have failed or struggled. On this show, the parental factor in the education equation comes up in almost every conversation we have about education. But the topic always seems to be beside the point. Today, it is the point. We're going to talk about how parents really get involved and how schools and teachers are working to make that parent involvement into a serious contribution, into an X factor. So, listeners, I have a question for you. Are you a parent or a teacher or both? I know some of the districts aren't in session quite yet. Tell us about a positive experience with a teacher or a parent, an example of how a parent or teacher used a strategy to overcome a challenge that involved the parent and was successful. Joining us now is education consultant Lisa Riegel. She's a former school teacher who has studied the relationship between schools and students and their parents, and she's written a book about it. It's called No Parent Left Behind. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you.
The title, of course, of your book is a play on words with No Child Left Behind, the federal law. Was there anything in that law about including parents in the process?
I think, as you stated in your introduction, it's always mentioned. The problem is it's not really ever operationalized or funded in a way that's very specific that would make parent engagement be more than something that would be nice to have as opposed to an integral part of what it takes to educate kids.
You wrote No Parent Left Behind. It's a handbook for parents of struggling students. But is there a book out there for teachers whose students are struggling with their failure? I mean, in other words, teachers struggle too with this, and they struggle to work with the parents and the families, or not always the parents, but whoever is taking care of the child, too.
When I wrote the book, I was in the classroom at the time, and I had parents that would come in and be concerned and worried about their kids. And so I thought, I'll put an annotated bibliography together of resources for parents on how to help their kids. And what I found was that there's a lot of stuff out there for teachers and for parents on academic things about helping your child learn to read when they're little. There's a lot of work out there on your storming adolescent and, you know, how to deal with mood swings. But there really wasn't anything I could find that was really just practical. Your kid is unorganized. He's not getting his homework turned in. How do you help? Your kid can't read at grade level, and now he's middle school or high school. What do you do? Your kid doesn't have good self-esteem, doesn't have assets. What do you do? So I wrote the book.
And that's assuming that parents query on the topic in the first place, that they know that they even have a role per se or feel good about having a role.
Right. And the first chapter of the book was really about exactly that. It's about the idea that parents and teachers really should be partners, and partners assume an equal contribution. When I work with parents and teachers, I talk about that teachers come to the table bringing a wealth of knowledge about that age group, but the parent comes to the table knowing their child. And so if you can join forces with an understanding, sort of like a social contract of, this is my role as the teacher, and these are the areas that you need to let me do my work and where you can trust that I'm an expert, and here's the areas that you're an expert on your child, and I need to know what your child, who your child is and what your child struggles with so I can apply the professional practices I know will help. And that relationship oftentimes isn't formed.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Lisa Riegel. She is an author, an education consultant, executive director of the Educational Partnerships Institute. Once again, listeners, are you a parent or teacher or both? Can you tell us about a positive experience overcoming a challenge with your child in school, where a teacher or a principal or a counselor or somebody helped you help your child do better in school? 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Do they teach teachers, Lisa, how to work with parents? So in college, when they're training teachers, do they teach them? Are there continuing ed courses on it that where they can learn new strategies as things change?
As far as I know, when I went through teacher training, which was a long time ago, we embedded the idea of parent engagement in the classes. How do you communicate this home? How do you talk to the parents? But there wasn't really a dedicated course on methods of communicating. At the MED level at Ohio State, I actually have taught the course School and Community Relations, and that kind of encompasses the whole community and thinking about how do you communicate for levies and for, you know, general stuff about the school. And then there's a segment on parent communication. But again, it's not really a focus in a way that it integrates that parent into the education process. It's sort of seen as something outside of, we do this, and if we're really good, then we'll call the parent well and keep them informed.
Did you ever notice as a teacher or as a parent that teachers glom onto the parents of the kids who are successful, and it feels like often to other parents that they're favoring them. The parent may not have no idea necessarily how the kid is performing in school, but there seems to be that the parents who are able to be there more.
I think that's the key, is that you develop relationships with people that are around you. And so the people who are on the PTO, who are in the school and volunteering, you naturally develop relationships with. So if you have their child in your class, it's easier to communicate. I think there's also a lot of misconceptions held by teachers about parents that don't have time to come. And I talk a lot with schools about the return on investment. A lot of parents have to find babysitters. They have to cancel work. They have a lot of things they have to do to get to the school for the events that you hold. And then when you get there as that parent, do you feel welcome? Is there a good return on investment for your time? Or are they handing you a packet of information that they could have mailed you? And actually, research shows that the most engaged parents with students are single mothers who work. And so that's something that oftentimes, if you don't show up to the school, they think, well, you don't care, you're not involved. And that's actually the opposite.
What do we know about why single mothers that work are the most engaged?
Well, we don't know a lot about why that is, but that they've looked at some of the misconceptions that teachers have reported when they've done studies with this, and they've found that teachers feel that they use sort of like a body count as the way to gauge parent engagement. And so if they have an event and they get 10 parents there or 20 parents there, they say, well, you know, the parents who weren't here don't care. And because we don't have multiple avenues to work with parents, and we tend to hold events like spaghetti dinners or open house evenings that are one shot and done, there really isn't a chance to develop relationships with those parents that can't come.
If parents are the big X factor, if they're so important, like I said, it's always funding goes to developing that relationship in a typical school.
Most of the grants that come through the federal or state have some type of a flag for parent engagement. Title I funds do. There's actually a parent engagement office at the Ohio Department of Education, and I've met the woman who runs that office, and she gets very frustrated too because she manages the grants and makes sure that the people are actually doing the parent engagement events. And again, I think you can have an event and invite parents in, but if you're not focused on how is this going to impact students, how am I training parents, helping students, doing the things we know will help the student engagement, then it's just sort of a social hour. And so a lot of parents don't come.
And how are they measuring success and how schools are spending these funds?
Well, when they turn in the reports from the grants that they have, they have to explain how they have reached out to parents. Oftentimes, you don't see a real logical progression of, here's the problem. We're going to define what we mean by parent engagement and what we want parents to do. And so really thinking about what do we know about the actions parents can take at home to set up study areas or support homework that will actually have an impact on student achievement. We don't see them defining that. We just say, we want more parent engagement or parent involvement. And then they hold activities that don't necessarily align to that actual problem since they haven't defined it. When they report what they've done, they basically just report the activities and maybe how many parents. I know the 21st Century Learning Centers have a parent piece, and the reporting's really just very numerical. We had 12 parents that we served, but there isn't really a connection. They're not asking for that connection between what happened because of that.
When you're talking about an urban district, things change a lot. Although in suburban districts, there's always at least a marginal number of this, but there's poverty, there's transience, there's cultural and language barriers, and there are education barriers. Mm-hmm. That I remember one school district I studied spent more than $2 million a year on security, mm-hmm. and nothing on overcoming any of those kind of challenges, like language barriers, for instance. What do you do if the parent doesn't speak English?
Those big schools that have very diverse populations, they have to have people on staff who have the ability to translate into multiple languages, and they do make a lot of efforts. A lot of schools have started doing parent-teacher conferences at apartment complexes so that people who have transportation barriers don't have to worry about getting to the school. They do make a lot of effort. There's also that cultural barrier where some cultures believe the school should do the school's job, and they don't necessarily feel that they're supposed to be intervening. And so overcoming that and letting them know, no, we want you here, is a big problem. And the other problem that you kind of mentioned with security is for the parent who's very uncomfortable to begin with and maybe doesn't have a lot of social capital to walk in with a voice for their student, mm-hmm. they walk to the gate and schools aren't very welcoming. When I left teaching and went to a different job where I was out visiting schools, I was surprised at how uncomfortable I was in schools, and I had lived in a school. That was my world for so long, and that's a necessity. I mean, we need to keep the kids safe, but it's one of those unintended consequences of that safety is that it really does make parents feel unwelcome, or they have to go through more barriers to get in.
And the translators, that's all good, but a lot of people communicate with teachers by email. Nowadays,
right.
Which is so convenient, and the best teachers are very responsive, and I know I've really appreciated that. Mm-hmm. But what if I don't speak the language? I mean, you have to there's a lag time for everything then, and there's a sense of immediacy with education that often I think is overlooked.
Yes.
That 2 weeks, all right, my kid needs to change his spot in the classroom because he can't see the board properly, or it's hard for him to focus on what the teacher is saying. 2 weeks later, they move a seat.
Well, the other problem that this might be a different show is the problem that it takes so long to get kids through the other pipelines to get them actually diagnosed with what's going on because we just don't have enough mental health help for kids. And so if you have a kid who has an auditory processing problem or something where he can't understand, some schools will start the accommodations immediately, but some of them won't do anything until they have that actual diagnosis, which can be 6 months.
Do you think schools are leaders or followers when it comes to the whole idea of parent engagement and bringing parents into the equation?
I think that varies from district to district. I think some districts are challenged in just getting what they need done. And I work on the Ohio Appalachian Collaborative, which is a group of districts in southeastern Ohio. And some of the people there are wearing multiple hats. They're the principal, the transportation director, the grants administrator, just trying to get their jobs done. And so figuring out how they can actually make time to do this, because it takes a lot of time to develop relationships. For some schools, it's just a real challenge.
You know, coming up, we're going to have the director of student support services for Columbus City Schools on the show. And I was just looking at the description, her job description this morning, and I cannot believe how many things and items there are
right.
in it. I just don't understand how you can focus on anything when you have 50
right.
things that you're supposed to be doing. Lucas in Columbus, you're a student teacher. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Sorry. I'm a little caught off guard by that.
What is your comment?
My comment is, I'm a student teacher, and I'm a professor named Richard Schumacher at Concordia University in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, for his master's program, he worked on this thing where they had to do, there was a name for it, and I can't remember, but they had to make a first positive contact with the parents, because usually the situation is that a teacher doesn't contact the parent until something bad is happening. So what they had to do is they had to make this first contact. And then the next year, he made them all do it the first year. And the next year he said, you can decide if you want to do it or not. And by the third year, all of them were doing it because they saw such a big change in the parents' involvement in this program that they had set up. There were a bunch of other things that happened mm-hmm. With this program. And I just thought that was something that it changed my perspective on what I'm going to do as a teacher. Don't wait for that thing to go wrong, because nobody wants, you know, that you close up when you hear like, oh, my child has done something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, Lucas, thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care.
That's actually a really important point, what he just made, is the idea of trying to reach out before it's a crisis, because especially with your at-risk students, parents rarely hear anything good. And when you bring them in and try to have a meeting with them, they are kind of already half shut down because they know we're just going to sit and listen to all the things my kid has done wrong.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest right now, Lisa Riegel. She's an author and education consultant. Coming up, as I said, Karen Hopper, Director of Student Support Services for Columbus City Schools. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the parenting X factor in the education equation today, how much it really matters, and how schools are working or should work to make that factor count. Still with us is education consultant Lisa Riegel. She's a former school teacher and author of the book No Parent Left Behind. Joining us now is Karen Hopper. She's Director of Student Support Services for Columbus City Schools. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Thank you for having me.
I was just saying that I was looking at it was an advertisement for your job in Education Weekly, I think, or Education Week, and I was shocked at how many bullet points there were.
Yeah, I was too, a little.
How do parents figure in, if you were to do an equation, I mean, what weight do you give the issue of parenting in the school, in the process of education in Columbus City Schools?
Well, you know, I'm a firm believer that the parents are the first and the most important educator, and have the greatest impact on the child's education. So, you know, we have a parent engagement program with approximately 130 parent consultants working in the buildings, and their primary job is to engage parents.
What's the greatest challenges, or are there? I know there are different buildings, vary a lot, even in the Columbus City Schools. It's the biggest district in the state. But what if you could just give me the top three, or what, you know, as far as the challenges that you face and that you're always working on?
You know, 80% of our families are economically disadvantaged, and you know there are challenges that go with that. And, you know, sometimes with attendance, just stressing the importance with families and trying to provide support and resources that they need, because for some families, you know, it's some of them, it's more of a survival mode, and we need to educate them of the importance of an education and how that's going to help their children, you know, possibly have a better life than they have, and engage them in the opportunities that are available for their children.
So how do you do that? What are some of the strategies you use to overcome that challenge, the poverty challenge?
Well, one of the programs that we have in the district through our college access partner, I Know I Can, is a workshop for parents we call Blueprint for Parents. And we invite families in. Middle school, we target middle school, and we also now have a high school component to that. And we invite the families in for the evening, provide dinner, and provide education to them about how they can prepare now for their child's post-secondary education, and show them the opportunities that are available. And we get some people who come maybe just for dinner, but afterwards they're there, they think, oh, wow, hadn't really thought of my child going to college and that there's financial support and opportunities that maybe I never thought of. So a lot of it's awareness. The more we can educate and make our parents aware of the supports that's here, available within our district and with our partners. I think that's crucial. And to have that person in a building, like our parent consultants, who are available to meet with families, speak to families, and again, provide some resources. One of the our efforts this year, we're going to focus a lot on the parent consultant collaborating more with our student support services staff. For example, pairing more with the counselor and the social worker, so that, you know, we're more of a team approach.
Who would be a parent consultant? What would they actually? What qualifications would they have to do that job?
Okay, they have to be have a child in the school where they are the parent consultant.
Okay.
And then we provide training and workshops and things for them. We have some parents that are trained in the parent-to-parent. They are trained as facilitators, and we offer workshops at various times during the year and try to bring families in from the neighborhood. If we can, you know, some of the problems are transportation. So the more that we can do at the school level or in the immediate neighborhood, you know, that gives more parents an opportunity to participate.
Lisa Riegel, parent to parent instead of teacher to parent or principal to parent. Is that, you know?
Well, you know, they sometimes listen to each other more than anyone else. And, you know, it's just like, you know, students or adults, you know, they connect more with each other. And if we can develop some trust and the relationship with our families where they feel welcome in our school, and that they, you know, if we can start that relationship by engaging a parent in the school through a parent consultant, you know, sometimes that is the link or the connection that we can make.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a positive story to tell us about how parent-teacher or parent-to-parent engagement in the school helped you work through a problem with your child or with a student that you taught, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest right now, Karen Hopper. She's Director of Student Support Services for Columbus City Schools and also education consultant Lisa Riegel. Transience is a very big problem. It's part of the poverty issue. What's being done to deal with that, where the parents, once again, it's not just the kid that's being is shuttled around from school to school. The parents, too. How do you develop relationships when you have that problem? Karen Hopper?
Yes. We do have a high mobility rate, and something that actually I'm at the Central Enrollment Center now, an initiative with the district is our Central Enrollment Center, where parents can come and do all of their enrollment of their children at one location, and then we have the resources available, and we also can then have more communication between the schools, and also we have the social worker on site, and that's just one example of something that we're doing to try to provide more support for families in transition or the transient parents.
How big of an issue is it?
Oh, it is an issue. Another important piece of that is that between our schools across the district, with, you know, 100 and some schools, that we have consistency with our curriculum and consistency with our services and our school climate and expectations. That, you know, a lot of times it's moving within the district, it's not out of district.
Right.
So if we have that consistency, then it's not a huge adjustment for a child when they go to another school, because they're thinking, oh, you know, everything was so different at the other school. But our expectations across the district should be consistent, and our curriculum is consistent. Each school, you know, we have alternative schools with different opportunities, but the expectations of the students, the school climate should be welcoming. The parent engagement piece needs to be a part that's consistent across the district as well.
What do you think has been the biggest change, transformation in education as it regards parents over the past several years?
Say that again. I'm sorry. I was interrupted.
What the biggest transformation there's been in education regarding parents? You know, I've talked about it already. Whenever I have an education-related show, somebody always calls up and says, well, there's always the parents. It's the parents, the parents, the parents. But...
Well, I think over the years, over many years, there's been a shift. And I think traditionally, a lot of people, even the school teachers' view was more teacher-centered than child-centered. And for the last 20 years, I think there's been a huge shift in the expectations, and with the development of the Common Core, and that, you know, our job as a school, as a state, as a nation, is to meet the needs of our students. And that might mean looking at differentiated instruction. That might mean that some students need more support than others. And our calling is to do whatever it takes to ensure that a child's learning, not look at it as, well, I taught it, they didn't learn it. We look at it, if we taught it and they didn't learn it, then we failed our students, and we need to look at what we need to do differently to ensure that a student is successful.
How do parents overcome the feeling that they're being nudges or nags, or they're wearing out their welcome, they're struggling with their kids, and school seems to be the only place they can go? Is it that parent-to-parent? Is that parent-consultant thing? Is that what you're hoping will address that issue?
Yes, because if that's their initial contact, and then that parent consultant can be resourceful and direct them to a school staff member resource or a community resource that might be able to provide support for the family.
Lisa Regal?
I also think it's very important to help teach teachers how to create positive relationships with parents from
mm-hmm.
the beginning.
Yes.
And part of that is setting some guidelines as to what is my role as the teacher and what is your role as the parent, and respecting the fact that a partnership is two equals. And so the teacher learning that I am the expert of the content, I'm the expert of knowing how to teach different kids and what goes on in my classroom and how to differentiate my instruction or change my instruction, but every parent is the expert of that parent's child.
Exactly.
And so if they can come to the table as an equal partner, that their voice is just as important as the teacher and the school that has all this information about learning and teaching, then I think oftentimes you can set some sort of a social contract or guidelines of, this is what my role is as the teacher, and these are areas that I can really intervene and help, or set you up with resources that will help you.
Karen Hopper, I know you can't speak for every teacher in the district, and you know, Lisa Regal, chime in if you want. How much do teachers want to get to know parents of their students? That's a lot of people to get to know every year.
And it is a challenge, but it's also a responsibility. And, you know, if we can't build those relationships, it's going to be a challenge to engage our students and our family. So I think, you know, it has to be a high priority if we're to be successful.
So if you're not a people person, maybe you're in the wrong business?
You might say that. We provide professional development for our staff.
Uh-huh.
We use the PBIS framework, the Positive Behavior Intervention Supports, and we provide professional development on how to manage the classroom, how to create a more positive, welcoming environment, how to set the expectations with the students, and some strategies to help support the teacher in the classroom to know what to do, you know, if a student isn't engaged. And we have other supports in place that, you know, we try to work with the support services staff, our intervention assistance teams, to try to look along with the parent as a partner, you know, what can we do to provide the supports that are needed to help the child be successful.
If a teacher is failing at connecting with parents, is that a big issue?
Yes, that would be something that, you know, we would expect a principal to address. I'm a former principal as well.
Yeah.
And I can't say that every teacher on my staff excelled at that skill. And mm-hmm. there are many times that, you know, I've had to kind of coach a teacher along, and, you know, maybe you could have addressed this way or said this a little differently and not, in, you know, with the negative connotation, but let's talk about the positives first. And, you know, some teachers need that coaching. You know, like you said, everyone is, that's not a natural at relationship building.
Mm-hmm. I think another issue that's big for teachers is fear, because parents can get very intrusive in, and they can take a lot of your time that you don't have. And I know I've worked with a lot of schools on setting up parent policies. What do you do when you have an angry parent that comes in? Because we want teachers to open their doors and bring parents in, but you bring in all their emotions and frustrations and anger. And sometimes if the teacher's not equipped to handle that, or if they don't know, when do I get my principal? What's our policy on this? How do I document if something goes horribly wrong so that if the parent then leaves my classroom and goes up the chain of command, I'm now not doing hours of paperwork and meetings and talking about what happened. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a risk there if there isn't something set up of here's our expectation and here's how we protect you and how we will support you in that relationship with a difficult parent.
Karen Hopper issue, correct? Or?
Oh, I totally agree.
And do you do that? I mean, is that, do you feel comfortable that they're doing that in the buildings in Columbus City Schools?
There again are some that are stronger and do mm-hmm. a better job at that than others, but that's our goal.
What about cultural differences? That's something that's, it's always been there, but in the last 20, 25 years with the increase in, immigration, it's different. Are teachers that maybe started teaching 15 or 20 years ago, are they learning and getting the same kind of continuing education about how to deal with different cultures and that sort of thing?
Yes, we have some schools that have more diversity than others and some that serve more of the ESL students. And, you know, we try to provide those teachers with some additional professional development and strategies and just to understand the culture.
Right.
And, you know, once people understand, again, when I was a principal, some of the things that certain cultures don't look you in the eye, something as simple as that, and a teacher might see that as a student being disrespectful, but that may be part of their culture. So the more we educate people about just something as small as that, that could become some kind of a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important that teachers understand that.
One of the things that I teach when I teach school community relations is the fact that teachers need to understand, they need to understand their own biases.
Exactly.
And sort of clean house in their own mind so that mm-hmm. they, when they open the door and invite parents in, they don't have a bad experience when they walk through the door. And I do want to give a shout out to, and I wish I knew which school it was. A lot of my students at OSU are teachers in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a school that gets all the teachers and puts them on a bus and drives them through the neighborhood and asks them to go find lunch. And they have to buy lunch at a convenience store because there are no restaurants. And
mm-hmm.
just gives them a moment to kind of walk in their shoes a little bit to see this is where the kids live that I'm working with. So how can I be a little bit more real about how I approach them and how I approach their families and kind of understand their culture beyond just the sort of book culture stuff that we talk about with different
mm-hmm.
kinds of ethnicities?
Yes, and some schools will have like a cultural, share food or different unique things about their culture so
yeah.
that everyone, the families and the staff can learn.
Because what an opportunity.
Exactly.
Right. And I know there's a principal up in Olentangy schools that actually brings in and interviews the parents from different cultures and basically brings them in with the idea of, I just want to know more. I want to know who you are. I want to know about you so that I can celebrate the things that are really fantastic about your culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been something that has been amazing because then those parents go back into their community
yes.
and they talk about this welcoming principal. And for her to, and she buys them lunch, brings them in, and it's like once a month or something. And it's been a really, really successful program because those informal leaders in the community, like you get with the parent to parent, those informal leaders sometimes have a much louder voice because they're trusted.
Exactly. And it's, trust and relationships are vital.
Well, Karen Hopper, thank you for sharing your time with us today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. Lisa, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Karen Hopper, she's Director of Student Support Services for Columbus City Schools. Coming up, we're going to hear from Terry Hickey. He's PTA president for a school in Southwestern City Schools. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the parenting factor in the education equation today, how much it really matters, and how schools are working or could work to make that factor count more. Still with us is education consultant Lisa Riegel. She's a former school teacher and the author of the book No Parent Left Behind. Joining us now is Terry Hickey. He's a PTA president at Central Crossing High School in the Southwestern City School District and president of Southwestern Council of PTAs. You're an electrician for the school as well.
One in school right now. I have two that are graduates of the district.
So from where you sit, how much does the issue of how parents fit into the education equation take up your time as PTA president? Or is it about buying new computers and different projects like that?
Well, it's different at different levels. When you're at the elementary and intermediate levels, there's a lot more day-to-day interaction as far as PTA, because parents will come in and help the children, you know, learn to read. They'll help, you know, they'll do tutoring type things and peer mentoring, that kind of thing. But as you move up and you get up into high school, speaking strictly for myself, I don't think I would be the greatest one to tutor a kid on calculus. So you get more away from the nuts and bolts and get more into just support activities. What can we do better as a PTA to help support the staff, students, and parents of the building?
So how does that manifest? What does that look like when you're talking about parents? Is it an X factor in Southwestern city schools? Is it something that's important that you do talk about a lot?
Absolutely. I've been, I guess, a proactive person throughout my children's education. And I look at, a lot of people start, obviously, they start reading with their children when they're quite young because they're preparing them for school. But they're doing more than that. They're actually reinforcing the importance of getting an education, of moving forward. So I think as the curriculum gets tougher, some of the parents can't keep up, and I've been there myself, sometimes it gets a little frustrating. So you have to start leaning on the professionals to do the professional's job. For example, I'm an electrician. If you call me to come work on your house, I'm not going to teach you how to do that work. You're trusting me as a professional to do my job and do it well. Well, if the lines of communication are open between the parents and the building administration, the teachers, that facilitates that whole process so that you're getting information straight from the source, the professionals, the subject matter experts, letting you know that your child is receiving the best education.
You know, kids in high school, there's the old adage, I won't tell you. Believe half of what your kids say about you if you don't believe half of what the kids say about me, teacher to parent. But kids in high school pretty openly talk about the crummy teachers, the good teachers, the teachers that are really nice but don't teach you anything, the teachers that are those things when parents hear that sort of thing, it can be frustrating. I'm sure you've heard it.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll be the first to admit, you know, just as in any profession, there are very good people and there are some not so good people. And sometimes as a parent, you have an obligation to proactively, I heard your caller earlier, Lucas, talking about a proactive versus reactive situation. The best way to diffuse that is for you as a parent. Sometimes parents put too much, this is my personal opinion, but I think they put a little too much stock in what their children tell them about what's going on at school instead of finding out for themselves. And so oftentimes the first interaction that a parent has with that teacher is confrontation. It's not a meet and greet. It's not, hi, how are you doing? It's it automatically becomes confrontational, and then it can just spiral from there. So as a parent, if you want to, you know, alleviate that situation, The best thing to do is be a proactive player. And I also heard Karen Hopper talking about relationships. Well, the first thing you have to have in any relationship is trust. If you're not building that trust relationship with the teachers and the other staff at that building, in my opinion, you're not holding up your end of the relationship.
The kids are learning a lot more in school these days. Well, all things being equal, they're being a lot more is expected of them. Has that part transferred to the parents as well? Do parents understand really what's expected of them, and is a lot more expected of them?
Absolutely. My oldest is 25. She'll be 25 next month. And my youngest is 15. He'll be a sophomore in high school this year. And the obviously we've raised the bar, which is good. We've raised the bar steadily over mm-hmm. the years to expect more and to prepare our kids better for the future. And even with the upcoming things, we've just, as a district, they agreed to this third grade guarantee that if children are not up to grade level by the time they're at the end of third grade, we will retain them in third grade and, an additional year if necessary. And then that's huge. I mean, that's a huge, guarantee to make. And as a parent, obviously my children are older, but I have a granddaughter who will be starting in the district very soon. So as a parent, grandparent, guardian, to me, that could be pretty intimidating if you're not touching base with the teachers to find out exactly where your child stands at a given time.
What's PTA like these days? What goes on in a PTA?
Well, once again, it's different at different levels. Obviously, at the elementary levels, still do a lot of the things to help the building. They'll actually provide some limited funds for teachers to help buy school or classroom supplies. And they'll have carnivals and fairs. And the big trend, big shift, which I like, is most of the activities they have now are multi-events, where instead of just having a spaghetti dinner and then next week having an art show, they will combine activities to try to bring more parents in and tie them to an educational aspect. So you're not just bringing people in to eat. You're bringing them in to eat and share in the education process that the children are going through, just like curriculum nights, things like that. So, but as you get up towards the high school levels, there's so many other players with band and band boosters, athletic boosters that, a lot of the PTAs, ours in particular at Central Crossing, our biggest priority is transferring every penny that we can take in into PTA scholarships that go to departing seniors. And they're small, they're $500 per scholarship, but they can be used for anything the students need, whether it be tuition, books, room and board. So it varies according to level.
Lisa Regal?
Yes, I'm wondering how you recruit parents to be part of your PTO, because I know as a working mother, sometimes I kind of feel like I'm on the outside of a very tight-knit group that does a lot in the school, but I can't do everything, and so I oftentimes feel like, well, they won't need me because they have a pretty good force of parents that work together. How do you work with the parent that maybe can't show up but would like to be involved?
Well, the first thing I always tell parents is, and I've done a few open houses and had a few speaking engagements, and the first thing I tell them is, when I have a room of 500 parents, I tell them, if each of you could give me 15 minutes this year, we would have a wonderful year. Everybody's life would be. I have parents that have helped me for many years now that have never been to a PTA meeting. They've never attended a meeting, but when I need them for certain things, they're there. They just do not like the structure and order, so to speak, and being at every meeting every time. But when called upon, those assets are there. So you kind of have to go find where they live. And the old stigma of PTA, obviously, I break that mold. the old stigma of PTA was it's a clique. You're in or you're out. And Ohio PTA and our council over the past few years have been working very hard to try to break that stigma. And I'm trying to draw in more fathers, more grandparents, because in today's world, you don't always have the nuclear family. You don't have two parents and children. In many cases, you have grandparents raising children, single grandmothers raising children, as well as foster children. So it's a very diverse group of people out there, and it's a challenge trying to tap, you know, enough resources to get the work done.
Have you seen issues, Terry, because, you know, you're president of Southwestern Council of PTAs, so you're sort of, you know, the big kahuna, I guess. Do you see some PTAs out there where they are cliques still, and they just don't want to have to worry about those parents who don't have the time? They want to do stuff like have the carnivals and buy stuff and worry about, you know, the tree plantings and as far as reaching out to other parents and that sort of thing, it's just not a high priority to them because it's not their problem.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of those issues that I, you know, in a perfect world, you'd find a solution, but there is no 100% solution. You still have, you know, I'd be a fool to say there aren't problems. We have problems in units every year. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing is, I always try to tell people, remember why you're here. Your number one reason for here, you're an advocate for children. That's your number one reason. So forget anything else you have going on. Forget the pecking order, everything else. As long as what we're doing is helping the children, that's the goal here. And so sometimes people stray off of that, and you have to do an ego check. You know, check the ego at the door, because we're here to do things for the kids.
Do you think that PTOs and PTAs, well, of course you do. You're going to say, well, of course they're still relevant. But could they be more relevant? Do you have any advice for people out there, for PTAs, for those kind of organizations, and what you think, how they could be different?
Well, obviously they have to be different because you have to change with the times. And the biggest shift that we've made over the last few years is moving into that digital age, you know, getting once again, going where people are. Go on Facebook. We post many things on Facebook. Twitter, you know, trying to go find the people where they are, because they're not where they used to be. Used to have the, you know, a lot of times the stay-at-home, my parents, you know, my father worked, my mother was a stay-at-home mom. That was the old guard, I guess, of PTA. In today's society, it just isn't like that anymore. I believe I'm sorry, one second, please.
Mm-hmm.
Your other guest, I'm sorry, I'm horrible.
Karen Hopper?
No,
Lisa Regal.
Regal, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Earlier, she had mentioned something about the, now I completely lost my train of thought.
That's okay.
I'm sorry, what
but
was the question again?
The whole relevance of PTAs, and maybe Lisa, you could jump in. I mean, are they still relevant? Actually, when we think about it, PTAs, parent-teacher associations, that's what this is all about.
I think it's interesting, too, because it's parent-teacher association, but it seems like it's parents working. And some, you know, they help the teachers, but I'm not sure. And again, I have a hard time going to them because I'm a working mother.
So you don't know how plugged in are the teachers. Terry Hickey, we're going to have to cut it off here, I'm sorry to say, but thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Anytime.
Terry Hickey, he's the PTA president at Central Crossing High School. He's president of Southwestern Council of PTAs. And also Lisa Regal, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That's Lisa Regal. She's an education consultant and an author. She teaches at OSU. Her book is No Parent Left Behind. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.